Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 33, Courting a Favour.
Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary. If you'd like to send us a message or some feedback, drop us a line at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com. And make sure you have a look at the show notes for this episode as well. You'll find those at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.
Oh yes, because they will tell you more about the story you're listening to, such as what our sources are and a list of the character names. So you can see how they look written down.
Super stuff. Now then, have we got any news and views?
Actually, yes, we do. I'd like to say a huge thank you to whoever nominated us for the 2012 European Podcast Awards.
Oh yes, that's quite an honour. Thank you very much. And I've also added another voicemail thingy to the website.
Oh, yes.
The Skype voicemail thing that we had wasn't all that good. It didn't seem to always work. We got a lot of blank messages and things like that. And especially if my machine crashed overnight.
Oh, yes. Computers. Yeah. Okay, so tell us how to use this voicemail thingy then.
Okay. Well, on every page now, you should see a large grey button on the right-hand side of the page with a send voicemail label on it. Make sure your computer's got a microphone attached. Click on that and it'll walk you through sending us a message.
Oh, that's excellent. We do like to hear your feedback, so do have a go.
We do. Yeah, please do. It's lovely to receive your emails. It always brings a smile to our faces. But to actually hear your voice makes you feel that much closer to us.
And if you don't mind your message going on a show, just say so, and you may hear your voice on a future show.
Absolutely.
Now, tell us what we're really waiting for.
What's that?
Tell us about the story.
Oh, all right then. Yeah. The halls of the other world hold many wonders, treasures and beauties. Ancient nobles, fey knights. And not the least is the great queen herself. Her beauty, conversation and wit have left our hero Puig breathless. When he retires for sleep and has a duty to visit the queen, he's faced with a major dilemma. Does he sleep with her, as Arawn had implied he could? Or does he honour Arawn's trust? After a while, he turns his back on her and waits for her to go to sleep before leaving her chambers. The stone hallways of Caer Arawn, the great mystical fortress that is the court of the Grey Lord, the Grim Comforter, seemed cold, bleak and lifeless as Puig led the two knights who were his escort briskly back to his own apartments. Trees growing up and along the walls shed their leaves as he approached, and shadows dark and jagged loomed suddenly out at him. Stewards and pages scuttled out of his way with some trepidation. The knights, Arawn's family from of old he knew, seemed to pick up on his mood and said little as they walked between the beams of ghostly moonlight streaming in from the high arched windows. Flaming torches in their sconces seemed to provide little light or warmth as they passed. Quick hardly seemed to notice as Yolin, the younger of his two kin, quickly and quietly opened the bedchamber's carven door and waited for him to step inside. Berwin and other stewards came out of the darkness then, offering him bread, cheese and mead, and tried to make him ready for bed. He took the offered food but sharply waved the others away, pulling the robe tighter around himself as he settled into the warm embrace of deep furs in an ornate chair. Another ruddy face in the background was stoking up the fire as Puig took small bites of the bread and cheese, washing it down with some warm mead. His fey minstrels struck up a melancholy tune from the other side of the chamber as a huge fire sprung into life at his side. A young knight leant forward to prod the logs into a still brighter blaze. Yolin came to his side. "The game at the table, sire?"
"Not now, Yolin."
"Perhaps I could call a minstrel for a tale, then?"
"No, my old friend. I wish to be alone."
At that, the knights withdrew from his chambers, and the pages moved back into the darkness, waiting upon his desires. He sat there and finished the small meal he had in front of himself, half watching the salamanders dance in the flames, while his thought was away along dusty corridors in another chamber in the castle. After a time, he called for the warming stones to be removed from his bed and climbed into the furs, gratefully surrendering himself into the gentle embrace of sleep. The next day found Puig striding across the main courtyard with his knights and a large black raven on his gauntlet. He had remembered that Aran had arranged for weapons practice first thing in the morning and was looking forward to the exertion of the exercise. He felt the huge bird fidget on his arm and fed it scraps from a bag as they walked.
"Are the fields prepared for us, Rhys?"
"Ah, that they are, my lord. They bought us many weapons."
"I hope they've got those new axes."
"Don't be so eager, Yolin. You might find one of them taking a bite out of you today."
"I should be cautious if I'm up against you then, my lord. Because if I'm not, I should be giving Rhys a bit of a clout, I'm thinking." As they left the courtyard and started to walk across the crisp grass towards the combat field, Puig spotted a small group of riders cantering towards them. At their head, the queen rode a tall grey courser, far outpacing the palfreys of her maidens. She slowed as she drew level to the man wearing the shape of Aran, her husband, and looked down at him, her hand gripping her horse's pommel and a thin smile on her lips. Puig was once more smitten by her presence, drawing in deep breaths of her quiet beauty as she effortlessly quieted the great mare beneath her. The courser's neck steamed under Puig's hand as he gently patted her, and the queen, again quieting the horse's restlessness, said,
"Are you well today, my lord?"
"I am much better than I was before I beheld the sun rise this fair morn, milady."
"I did not realise you were up so early, my lord. Were you troubled by uneasy dream?"
"Nay, milady, the sun I did behold was in your features as you rode across the frosty field, forming all before you."
"You are too kind, my lord."
"And I marvel at the skill with which you control this noble beast beneath you."
"Mayhap I can show you that skill later, my lord."
"Mayhap you could, my lady, and that would be my honour. Now it seems that I must bid you farewell, for I see that you and your ladies are in need of refreshment."
"Farewell at your sport then, sire."
"Until later, my lady."
Puig watched her depart then, and turned back to his smiling knights. They strode to the combat field, and each chose a weapon from the wooden tables arranged there, the squires hastening to adjust their arms for them. Puig took a few practice swings with the heavy wooden sword he'd chosen, and picked up a riveted targe for protection. He noticed that although several mortals and the shining ones had gathered to watch the practice, there were no fey knights amongst those who had stepped forward for the battle. Puig placed his cloak in the hands of a page and stepped forward. As he did so, the others rapidly finished their preparations and joined him. He pointed at Rhys, who was carrying a long spear-type weapon with a broad iron head, that some memory of Arounds told him had come from a time after Pwyll's own and was known as a halberd. He lifted his targe, the sword held out to his right side. Rhys stalked forward and suddenly swung the butt of the weapon towards his sword arm, and Pwyll was forced to parry with his sword. He quickly threw a blow with the targe at Rhys's head, but was in turn blocked by the weight of Rhys's halberd swinging back over at him. Pwyll realised that this weapon was not used like the spears he was more familiar with, but could also function like an axe, and that meant he had to get in close. He decided to take the offensive, and swung his sword up under Rhys's defence towards his armoured stomach, forcing Rhys to take a step backwards, quickly following the move by pushing the spear weapon away with the shield and gaining a clear shot at Rhys's face with the hilt of his sword. Pwyll's sword fist connected, and Rhys crumpled backwards to the floor, blood flowing from his nose. He glanced up at the tall, powerful figure of Arounds standing over him, sword at his neck.
Blood to you, my lord.
It was a good fight. Rise, cousin,
said Pwyll, holding out his hand and helping Rhys to his feet. Together they watched the others finish their duels, Eolin indeed choosing a somewhat huge axe, and being well and truly tranced by a knight wielding a thin spear so gracefully that it seemed to flow effortlessly in spirals through the air. After that, they had all laughed, clapped each other on the back, and refreshed themselves with some ale before they started practicing at the wooden pels. Pwyll moved to his, and swung sword, axe, and shield at the pel, thudding into it until chips began to fly off the wood. He was the last to leave the field, sweat beading on his brow. After resting and cleaning up, Pwyll had the afternoon to himself. His mind kept returning continually to the queen. Waiting no longer, he went off in search of the Great Queen, his retinue training behind him. He passed through enormous halls and long, shifting corridors, with many more of those strange murals carved into the great stone blocks. Many depicted Arounds taking part in battles, strange and foreign to Pwyll. Arounds enthroned before a large group of angry people, waving his hands at them and pointing at individuals. And another, with Arounds standing before flowing gates that were clearly not human, and conversing with huge and ancient, disturbing entities. With some relief, Pwyll finally entered a chamber richly furnished and decorated with trees, flowers, and brightly woven tapestries. The murals there depicted the queen as well as Arounds. He saw her riding through white woodlands at Arounds' side, and then he saw their wedding day, and the obvious joy and love they shared as they sat side by side on their thrones. Strangely, he saw one panel showing the queen apparently mourning Arounds, and then rejoicing in his return on some autumn twilight. This last panel made him strangely uneasy, and he hurried from the room, continuing his search, not noticing that the memory of each panel was slowly fading as he walked, until only a feeling of wonder and beauty and ages long past remained. He was still hoping to come across the queen when he found himself back at the main hall again, and several lesser knights approached him, all dropping to one knee.
Rise, rise. What is it?
A gathering, my noble lord. There's a group of armed horned ones approaching from the northwest. They look like a raiding party.
Pwyll looked to the senior knights in his retinue. Eolin looked excited at the news, whereas Rhys and some of the others looked merely hungry and bored.
How long before they reach our lands?
If they keep up their pace, they'll cross our borders tomorrow afternoon, lord.
Then we will ride at the break of day. Prepare yourselves, my lords.
And with that, they all bowed to Pwyll and headed away, leaving Pwyll to head off to his own chambers, pages and stewards suppling his leather and preparing his war gear for the forthcoming conflict. Pwyll could only hope that his arm carried the strength of Arounds, as his mind built up horrific images of what these horned ones might be.
He drew around's mighty sword, wondering whether he ought to sharpen it, and its grey blade seemed to waver in the light, neither being completely in this realm, nor of it. His hand drew back from its edge. He knew that it needed no sharpening. He waited in his chambers then, as the activity around him continued, until it was time to head down to the great hall again and enjoy the day's main meal. As he arrived, all turned, bowing towards him, and he noticed that his queen was already in her seat. He walked up the steps of the dais and caught a scent of summer meadow flowers as he passed behind her. He stopped in front of his seat and turned towards her. He reached for her soft hand and brushed it lightly with his lips.
My evening is brightened by your presence, my lady.
And would be that my nights are brightened by yours, my lord.
Smiling at the queen, he sat down then, and the court sat down following him. He selected a choice cut of meat and indicated that the platter be borne next to Rhys, giving him a smiling nod as he did so. Rhys then told those serving to move on to Yolin, and each in turn until all those at the top table were eating heartily. As he waited his turn, the noble earl to his left seemed to have little conversation this evening, and Pwyk wondered whether he would ever understand the strange fey mind. The minstrels struck up a merry tune, and Pwyk found himself once more enchanted by the conversation of the queen, who was joking with his courtiers. They were also paying her court, and several times he had to remind himself that he was the ruler of this land, and that it was he who would be seeing her in her bedchambers that night. And it was then that the reality of his situation seemed to slip into his mind like the wisps of dark smoke creeping under a tight shut door. He was not around, but Pwyk, Prince of Dyfed, and this wondered lady was not his queen. In truth, this was the first time that Pwyk found himself thinking that his life of hunting and paramours might not be as complete as he had thought. Such a queen by his side and in his own bed would surely bring delight and warmth to his hall back in the valleys. He brought himself out of his reverie, almost feeling jealous that she was spending her time talking with them instead of him. Surely there is no steed as swift in this land as Milady's wit.
Oh, you are too kind, sir. And I see that there is no steed as swift as your flattery this night. Pray, let us await the next dish.
Gladly, milady. Pwyk washed his hands again in the water bowl, and Berwyn handed him a towel to dry them. The fey dancers appeared in the hall then, Elaine amongst them, and the minstrels stopped playing, waiting for the fey musicians to begin their dance. This night, the dance was to be delayed, however, as Elaine stepped up to the main table and stood before the queen.
It's as clear and sharp as crystal this night, and the wind blows gentle music through the icicles. Would you care to dance with us, dear sister?
Why not indeed?
Pwyk watched in amazement as the queen stood, a page helping her out of her chair, her handmaidens following her to the edge of the tables. Tall fey with unusual harps that hung over their shoulders, and others with shells, small drums, and instruments made of twigs and branches could be seen at the far end of the room. Even more fairies seemed to be sitting among the boughs of the huge trees supporting the roof, which seemed to be full of leaves and birds far above their heads. She moved amongst the Tulwith Teg then, a figure of glowing beauty, and all eyes in the court were on her. The grace of the scene took Pwyk's breath away. Never had he seen anything so enchanting. The minstrels started playing for the dance, their music unworldly and ethereal, and joined by birdsong from high above. The dance started sedately enough, with dancers in two concentric rings moving in opposite directions, first stopping, turning, and moving on again. Those in each ring then changed places, and the dance continued in the other direction. At some unseen signal, the pace of the music changed. The drums began a primal rhythm, and the dancers started to whirl about each other, their legs weaving complicated patterns and then flying high in the air, making their own percussive accompaniment to the music of the minstrels. The glorious gowns of the Shi flowing around them in waves of many colours were only outshone by the bright golden yellow of the Queen's gown, as she kept perfect time with these fast-moving dancers. As she performed some of those high kicks, Quick found himself drawn again and again under the grace of the Queen's dance. Somehow, the dance came to an end. Quick could neither remember or even see how it had happened, and the Queen mounted the steps onto the dais. She was glowing from the dance, slightly breathless and smiling as she took her seat next to her husband.
Did you enjoy the dance, my lord?
My lady, as beautiful and as enchanting as it always is.
I am pleased the Shining Ones brought you pleasure, my lord.
Nay, they were but the background to the grace and beauty that was your dance, my lady.
Was that all you saw in the dance, my lord? Tonight the magic of my dance was for you alone.
I saw the gentle flowing and beating of wings, birds with long graceful necks who leave for warmer climes as the depth of winter settles on the land.
Is not the warmth of the fire always followed by the chill of the night?
But I also saw much more, my lady. I saw the leaping of the stag and the pounding of great steeds in the hunt.
As did I, my lord. None can deny the heat of the chase when it is upon them.
Indeed, that is so, my lady.
And so the evening progressed in much the same fashion as it had on the first night. Quick found himself dreading the visit he knew he must make to the woman he had to deny once more, and a heart that could only be wounded further on each of the nights coming in the following year. His heart bled just as his loins burned. The next day he saw the marshalling of the troops as the wan sun broke through the grey clouds onto the wide fields before Kaer Araun. His own military mind, combined with the memories of Araun, was quite happy to organise his men into companies. Those with spear, swift and deadly on the flanks, those with heavy horse and armour in the centre, with himself at the head. The squires milling amongst them adjusted straps and tightened buckles. The greys of Araun's colours seemed to glow a black and silver as his banner was hoisted high in the hands of a knight next to him. The ladies were waiting quietly in the west, with warm cloaks around their shoulders, mounted on gaily dressed palfreys. As Puig's preparations neared completion, knights would ride up to them and ask a maiden for a favour, offering their spearhead to that lady's lap as she tied a ribbon or a silk from her clothing to it. Quick assumed that this was some sort of courting ritual, until the Queen beckoned him over. He nudged Storm's mighty flanks towards her.
Are you ready for battle, my lord?
The advisers tell me these men are brutish, and although strong, we are more than a match for them. So we will drive them back over our borders, my lady.
And yet, how can you be so sure without the favour of this land and its lady?
Quick sat, suddenly dumbfounded. Memories of his own flooded back into him. It was a custom of the old tribes to never forget honour for the lady of the land. For to do so would be for his own tribe to lose her blessing and open her way into the land for those who would bring honour to her. Without her favour, win or lose the day, the survival of the tribe was forfeit. How could he have been so caught up in his kingly arrogance to have forgotten this? Even Araun's memories held images of a favour being sought from the Queen. He gently brought his own spear tip up to her lap.
My lady, I would indeed crave a favour for our coming battle from you, the fairest in this land, and I would also beg for your forgiveness.
You shall have both, my lord,
said the Queen, as she looped a beautiful yellow silk ribbon from her hair around his spear point. They rode then, until the cool sun strode high into the sky, their horses' hooves pounding a deep rhythmic tattoo on the white ground, throwing up clods of snow and earth about their withers. Although Quick's mind should have been on the coming battle, it was not. His thoughts were full of the Queen. Her face swam before him, smiling and with longing, with a passion that he had seen for 2 nights now, a passion that he had had to deny her, and to deny in himself as well. Every time he spoke to her, he felt as if he were a mere innocent stripling again, and yet also the most important man in the world. And with a sudden awareness, he knew this feeling was not coming from around. He realized that he was perched on a precipice of deep and dark danger, for he could easily fall in love with this otherworldly woman. His thoughts were broken as a keen-eyed Fey Knight called out that the enemy were in sight, and Puik led them to the top of a small hill to the east of their position. There he reined in the mighty Storm, who was eager for the excitement of battle, and whose flanks were now only just beginning to grow warm from his exertions. Quickly, Puik dispatched outriders to skirt the enemy formations, and then sent his flanking knights out to their woodland positions on either side. When that was done, they waited, each man loosening his sword in its scabbard, or making their spears ready. They saw them then, horned beastmen, loping and baying towards them, huge furred creatures of ghastly nightmare, with muscles and tendons on the outside of their bodies that seemed to have only one thought in their minds, the decimation of Puik and his men as they waited on that hilltop. As they started to mount the slopes of the hill, Puik tucked the yellow silk ribbon into his doublet and gave the order to charge. As he thundered down the slope, his spear stuck fast, deep into the brawny chest of the first huge fleshy monster that rose above him, and his second spear was broken by another's axe swing. Drawing a round ghostly blade from its sheath, he pressed into his foes, Storm's momentum carrying him through the battle, his other knights beside him. Within minutes, the enemy had been caught on 3 sides at once, and the few that remained had routed from the field, howling in dismay. Then Puik and his brave companions made litters for their fallen and turned back towards home. Puik was strangely aware that the fallen would be at his side the next day again, for in Death's realm, how could a man truly die? After an evening of much celebration and many barrels of ale, Puik found himself again in the Queen's bedchamber. Once more he lay down beside her, disappointed that her arms no longer reached up for him. He watched her eyes as they roved over his face, looking for some sign, some movement, some indication as to why the two of them had become so distant behind these curtains. For the first time, as he turned away from her, he saw the real questions in her eyes and could only guess at the fears she might be hiding. In our next episode, Puik gathers his armies and rides forth to face Around's nemesis at the ford between the realms, and enters mortal combat to repay his debt.
Wow, that one about had it all, didn't it? Romance, courtly intrigue, excitement, adventure.
Yeah.
My goodness.
But now it's time for Puik to fulfil his promise. Will he manage to succeed where Around failed?
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. In the meantime, do we have any listener feedback?
Yes. We had a fascinating message from Simon, a Welshman who has heard a slightly different pronunciation of the word Puik. He sent us a link to a sound file so that you can hear.
Interesting. I was having enough trouble with the first one.
You'll be fine. Have a listen.
Puik.
To be honest, it's hard to tell the difference.
It is, isn't it? But basically, his dialect has the first part of the diphthong as a short o sound rather than oo. And the answer is that both ways are correct, as the Welsh pronunciation changes depending on whereabouts in Wales you grew up.
Really?
Yeah. Fascinating enough, there are really big differences between Northern and Southern Welsh. They use different words to say the same things and so on. The version we've chosen to use is the closest guess to the pronunciation of historical Middle Welsh, the language of the Mabinogion. But if you think about it, even that's got to be a guess.
Well, unless you happen to have a 700-year-old Welsh speaker in a little old cottage somewhere.
Absolutely. Anyway, you'll find links in the show notes to follow this up if you're into this sort of thing.
Before we move on, we've got some more listener feedback from our new voicemail widget on the website.
Oh, that's cool. Who's it from?
Well, it's from our friend Carol. She runs the Pagan eBooks for Free page on Facebook, where you can download lots and lots of free eBooks, and you'll never get to read them in a whole lifetime,
so
I don't think.
Is this the page that I've got all the links from? I've downloaded the books that have filled up my Kindle and I'll never have time to read?
Yep, me too. Yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely
brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. She's the reason that I've invented a new word.
Oh yeah, what's that?
Kindling. Now you might think it's the stuff that they put on fires. Uh-huh. No, this is a verb. To kindle. I kindle. That means to cuddle up in bed warm and read your Kindle.
I see. So I see. It may catch on.
It may not.
However, just to make it quite clear that Pagan eBooks for Free on Facebook also...
But you don't actually have to have a Kindle to read the books, do you? They works on other eBook readers as well, is that right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah,
brilliant.
You can even read them on your computer, I think. So,
well, that's clever. So, shall we listen to this message?
Yes, let's.
Hello, Gary and Ruthie. Just sending an inbox blessing from Pagan eBooks for Free. We love your show. Keep up the good work. Love you.
Oh, Carol, that was really kind of you. Many Imok blessings to you too.
Well, we love what you do too, and so do loads of others. And I'm sure you guys out there will love what she does. So go and find her page, Pagan eBooks for Free, on Facebook.
And we'll have a link in the show notes for you, Carol. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Carol. So, after all that excitement, have you got a promo for us?
I have. I thought it'd be nice to remind you guys about one of the major sources that we use for our Celtic source material.
Ah, you're talking about the amazing website set up by Mary Jones, aren't you?
That's right. Have a listen.
Trying to find a poem by Taliesin? Not sure who the Morrigan is? Need a good picture of Stonehenge? Curious about the latest archaeological finds from ancient Gaul? Hi, my name is Mary Jones, and all this and more can be found at my site, www.maryjones.us, where I run the Celtic Literature Collective, Jones's Celtic Encyclopedia, the Celtic News Update, and lots more. Again, that's www.maryjones.us. Hope I'll be seeing you.
Thank you, Mary. If you get a chance to pop along and browse through her mammoth collection, the work she's put into gathering all of this information is absolutely astounding.
It really is.
Mm.
She's even put together her own Celtic encyclopedia, a single place to look anything up.
Pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Do we have anything else?
No, we've definitely run out of time. We've come to an end.
Oh, well. Until next time, we'd like to wish you many blessings and say,
Húl Vár.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a massive thank you to Anne-Ruth, Kira, Celia, Dave the Bard, The Dolman, Keltoria, Kevin Skinner, Phil Thornton, SJ Tucker, and Spiral Dance. All of these wonderful friends have given us unrestricted access to their music. More details about each of them can be found in the special Friends of the Show page on our website. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.